Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and we are going to talk this hour about the healthcare town meetings that have been taking place all over the country and here in the state of Maryland. Senator Cardin held his own just the other day and held another one today in Hagerstown or Hancock or both.
He didn't exactly hold his own, but he came very close.
Well, we'll get to that. So the question is, and that was Bob Somerby, one of our guests. The question is a couple of things here. What is happening in America? Is there a kind of a perfect storm here of President Barack Obama and others in administration not being able to make the case, and the case being diluted to start with, that the healthcare industry and the pharmaceuticals have a huge amount of power and money, and what's been unleashed is a kind of right-wing conservative barrage against all this, maybe not so much at the behest of the insurance industry, but certainly fueled by their intent to have healthcare reform that doesn't affect profits. And the other side, the liberal side, the Democratic side, has not really not made their argument very strongly. So more to that, is something else going on here? What are your thoughts at 410-319-8888? The voice you heard coming in a minute ago was Bob Somerby, who's editor of the Daily... Oh, it's fine, Bob.
I'm sorry.
It's all right, Bob. Who's editor of the Daily Howler, and for many years was a great stand-up comic. Still does it once in a while. Lenny McAllister joins us by phone, political commentator for Fox News in Charlotte, North Carolina. He's a contributor to TheLoop21.com and author of the new book, Diary of a Mad Black Proud Young Conservative. Would that be PYC, P-Y-C? Lenny, are you there?
I am here. How are you doing this afternoon?
Good, man. Good. Well, welcome to have it. Is it PYC, P-Y-C? You say PYC, P-Y-C?
I spell it out, P-Y-C, Diary of a Mad Black P-Y-C Proud Young Conservative. It's available now on Amazon. And, Mark, thanks for having me back.
All right. It's always good to have you here. And in the studio, well, is Diedrich Muhammad, who is Senior Organizer and Research Associate for the Program on Equality and the Common Good at the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C. Diedrich, good to have you back as well.
As always, it's good to be here.
And we want you all back on the air with us at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888, to join us with your thoughts and comments and your thoughts on the things we're about to talk about today. So, and people are calling in, so we'll get to those calls in a minute. So what is going on here? I mean, what began as a debate to kind of talk about healthcare reform, the healthcare industry was out there in the beginning saying that we support reform, and President Obama had a White House meeting gathering all the forces into the White House, and except for the single payer forces, they weren't part of the discussion, but all the other parts were there, and Congress was having a mad dash, three different bills, couldn't get it together, but the power clearly was with the healthcare industry and with pharmaceuticals, and now all hell has broken loose, and it seems as if the bottom is falling out of healthcare, which you wrote about today in the Daily Howler. I'm going to go to Diedrich and over to Lenny.
Well, I've been working on this all week. I mean, I've been doing stuff on this for weeks now. I mean, I just feel like the liberal world has had 15 years, the liberal and Democratic Party worlds, liberal, progressive, and Democratic Party worlds have had 15 years since the last failure to get ready for this. And we sat around and twiddled and diddled. Very few people understand how ludicrous our national healthcare situation is. When you look at the data about what we spend per person versus what every other developed nation spends per person, those are the craziest data I've ever seen. We spend roughly twice. Now, everyone mentions this in passing, but very quickly. We spend so much more money. So much money is being looted out of our system for similar results to every other developed nation. We're spending twice as much, getting the same results. There's gigantic looting going on. The Democratic Party, the liberal world, has made no attempt to help people understand that in the last 15 years. People don't understand that. People say they're happy with their health insurance. That's because they don't know how much of that premium they're paying represents some form of looting, which, you know, have you seen anyone in the New York Times or the Washington Post explain where all that money is going? CNN actually did a report on that last night, which was shocking, because it's basically information you're not allowed to have in this country. So I think I would say the Democratic Party and the liberal world has made no effort in the last 15 years to get ready. You have to give people a reason to believe that we need big change. And the conservative world, their talking points have always been out there, you know, European healthcare has never worked anywhere, and blah, 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 we have the best healthcare in the world. Everyone's heard them a million times. It's in everybody's head. Their messaging has gone on forever. Our messaging has never even started. So we started as losers. Now, we may still get some kind of reform, but we're starting from a position of tremendous disadvantage.
Speaking of conservative opinion, Lenny McAllister, let me let you go next.
Well, I think that what we have to look at is, you know, we do spend more than any other civilized country. But
twice as much.
We could say the same thing about public education, too. And if you look at public education versus private education, for example, here in Charlotte, North Carolina, we spend roughly three times as much on public education than we do on private education, but yet we have a 50% dropout rate. So the question has to be begged, if you're going to create institutions that are going to waste money, and government has a track record of wasting money when it gets its hands on things, why do we want to move in that direction? Why not instead incent these insurance companies and these pharmaceutical companies to compete against each other and let them slash their own throats by way of competing for price points, which will drive costs down, which is a true issue with healthcare accessibility. It's not the quality of healthcare that we have in the United States that is still number one in the world. It's accessibility to healthcare. And the way we make it more accessible is make it cheaper for more Americans and let it be more accessible in that regard. Why are we not pursuing that instead of going with an all-expansive program that may not be the answer? And in many circles, as far as I'm concerned, and many others, it is not the answer. You're seeing this at the town halls now being voiced.
Yeah, well,
Patrick Mohammed.
I think we just, you know, heard a kind of a conservative critique of the Obama's healthcare reform plan. But I think to answer the question of, you know, kind of what's happened with the healthcare reform plan, I mean, I think, you know, change is difficult. And I think actually because I believe this country has been for quite a while a center-right country. And that this idea that government, particularly when it's dealing with issues of domestic policy that is based on helping people, it has been drummed in people's heads that government is bad when it comes to that. Government's not bad in kind of national security actions and military actions, but government is bad when it's talking about domestic policy reform. And I think that kind of mindset is still with so many Americans. And I think a little bit of the Obama magic, you know, has worn off. You know, it's been about 6 months since he's been in office. I think the conservatives are striking back. They're coming back. They are finding their footing. And this is like a mix of people concerned about, well, what will healthcare reform, I think particularly older people, actually mean? Will I lose out on this? Plus just a general backlash against the people who voted against Obama in November are coming out more and more to say we want our country back. I'm not quite sure what that means, and I'd like to pursue that a little bit about when did they have the country, what does that mean? But I think it's a mix of things.
Let me say to Lenny, I don't have any particular confidence in the solutions that are being offered so far. I'm not full of confidence in what the Congress is doing. Personally, I feel when people can't define a problem forthrightly to start with, I don't have gigantic confidence that they're going to solve the problem. And I think the Democratic Party and the liberal world have really shied away from discussing how ludicrous our situation is. The Democratic Party is largely enthralled to the corporate interests involved here, too. You know, we started out by sort of giving up. But here's my main point. You have to have a discussion first, and we have failed to do that over the last 15 years. Our side, the Democratic Party liberal side, has failed to discuss where is all that money going? Why do we spend twice as much as other? Where is that money going? That conversation should have been going on for years, and it wasn't. And so, you know, we're in a situation where very few people, including me, can really feel confident that they understand the problem and the situation that we face.
I want to open the phones here early because I want to get people in this conversation with us, and I want to, in a little bit after a few callers to explore what Diedrich was alluding to a moment ago, which is what's going on in these town meetings, what this represents in America, what is represented by the interview I saw this morning with the man who was carrying his gun in New Hampshire, saying. And the banner talking about how we have to war the Tree of Liberty with the blood of tyrants, and I want to jump into that. I think that's why I'm saying that this is a kind of a perfect storm. There's a confluence of events happening here, and let's look at those. 410-319-8888. Diedrich Mohammed, Lenny McAllister, Bob Somerby with us, and you and Tim, you're on the air.
Well, thank you for inviting me to join in on this deep conversation.
it's a very important conversation, and I just wanted to express, and I want people to realize that there is no way I'm not a racist, but I noticed that most of the people that are showing up at these town hall meetings are usually either middle class or upper class Caucasian folks who have the quality health care that we all would like to have, whereas as if the people who don't have the health care, the people in the inner cities and the outskirts of the cities that are going on Medicaid and Medicare aren't a, you know, you can't hear their voice because their voice is not as loud as the people who are screaming and fussing. This one little small issue that happened years and years ago with Bill Clinton and Bill Clinton's presidency has all of a sudden become a firestorm. It wasn't that bad when Bill Clinton and Hillary were working on health care. This, why is it a firestorm now? And it was a, should have been just as much of a firestorm then.
Well, that's an interesting point. Is it that different? And I know, Bob...
It was a pretty big firestorm then, and it was a big, big defeat for President Clinton.
But the whole town hall kind of like... The tensions, I think, of the personal tensions and name-calling does seem different. I mean, there was a credible lobby against the health care reform, and it was effective organized strategy, but I don't remember it as having the same type of coming near to blows among different sides. And I do think, you know, part of it is a racialized or kind of race in the background atmosphere behind it. I mean, I just keep thinking of the African American woman who had a picture of Rosa Parks, and then at one of these town hall meetings, which is, it's interesting what posters people are bringing to these town hall meetings, because they're bringing issues from all over the place, and then a white man comes over and grabs it from her, starts tearing it up. She confronts him, and then the generally white crowd applauds as the police take away the black woman. And I just know, as an African American, that really had an effect on me. And I think we're seeing, it's not always, the healthcare reform isn't something necessarily about race, but the racial components, I think, are being shown in the in some of these town hall meetings, in the discussion. That's kind of underlying a lot, I think, of what is happening as well.
Let me kind of say, I think I'd like to get you, I mean, this issue of race and conservatism is one that is part of what's bubbling under the surface here. And as a black conservative, a black Republican, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, number one, I think that we are overlooking some of the dynamics of political America. For example, black Americans, statistically speaking, over the last 40 to 60 years, get involved with elections once every 4 years. That's around presidential election time. Young people get involved with the political process once every 4 years. That's around the presidential elections. They don't usually go to town hall meetings because they're working. They don't usually go to town hall meetings because they don't know as much about the facts, nor are they, generally speaking, as engaged in the political process as the retiree that's concerned about their health care, or as the individual that owns a home or owns rental property as well.
Do you think that changed under Obama? Or it's changing now? Being the
Muhammad asking the question.
Well, changing, but I would say this, if it were changing as much as we would like it to change, then some of these town halls, I mean, congressional figures also represent people in urban environments. How come we're not seeing a lot of 27-year-olds speaking up for this plan? How come we're not seeing a lot of married yuppies and bumpies standing up in their mid-30s, standing up for this plan? We should see a contrast. What we're seeing in the media are generally older, white, middle America.
But I just want to put forward, though, I mean, I think the media clearly is focusing on a conservative backlash at these health care meetings, because if you do see it, like, you clearly see there are Obama supporters out front of the thing, and oftentimes there are many more people of color over there, and then there are people who are against the health care reform who oftentimes have anti-Obama signs. So people are clearly there, and also a lot of these town hall meetings seem to be much more in areas and districts that don't seem to be in a major black area, a major urban area, but in much more of a white, more rural or suburban district. So I wouldn't take just from these last week of town hall meetings that this means that people of color or people from the inner city aren't engaged. I think, we're looking at a very limited grouping at these town hall meetings.
You know, there's much stronger messaging and much stronger feeling against the plan than for the plan. I don't know anyone who's violently in favor of the plan. You know, there's a lot of people who are violent. When I say violently, I don't mean that they're going to go out and shoot someone. There's a lot of people who feel, whatever reason, and some of the reasons are crazy, and some of the reasons have been made up and invented, and some of the reasons aren't crazy, however you end up evaluating them. But a lot of people, and it comes out of the world of talk radio, conservative talk radio, a lot of people feel very strongly. This is a typical political issue where it isn't so much a matter of 50% being for it and 45% being against it. It's a matter of which 10% really feels strongly. And clearly, there's much stronger feeling anti than pro at this point.
And I think the strongest feeling pro is related really oftentimes more to a strong feeling pro Obama. It's right. Not even a strong feeling pro the healthcare plan. It's that we're going to continue to support Obama. Obama's right. For this. We're going with this. I do think conservatives have a much more stronger anti-healthcare plan than progressives have for a pro-healthcare plan.
Because it's very hard, in all candor, it's very hard to understand the plan, and I don't think we really understand how crazy our health system is.
Let me get a few more callers, Neil. I'm going to talk about a poll that came out from Gallup today, which I doesn't think it may in the long run, polls change daily, but may in the long run not bode well for President Obama. 410-319-8888. Maria, you're on the air.
Hi, good evening. It's Maria Allwine from Baltimore.
Hi, Maria.
Hi. I was at the Cardin, actually the protest. I tried to get into the town hall but couldn't. And I don't think we can talk enough or overestimate the part that racism plays. I really don't. I mean, I've been an activist for a while. I was sick at the taunts, the chants, and the sentiments being yelled out by the so-called opposition. The people had posters of Obama as Hitler, the Democratic Nazi Committee, and, you know, things like that. And I had many exchanges with people who were, I mean, frantically angry, really angry. There is no civil discourse that these folks want to engage in. It's strictly to disrupt these meetings, and they do it, as I said to a couple of women, you cannot accept the fact that an African-American man is president and that liberal policies, and of course they're not liberal enough for me, but regardless, at least are being discussed somewhat. Your guy isn't in the White House anymore. And boy, they lit into me and said, oh, you're calling us a racist. And I had to say, I'm not putting that label on you, but you go ahead and put it on yourself if it is appropriate, if it fits you. And the one, I said, we got into a discussion, and I said to the one woman, it was really more like a confrontation. It wasn't a discussion. But I said to the woman finally, I said, so if you're opposed to any kind of government intervention, I said, I guess you opposed Bush's tax cuts for the wealthy. And she said, well, I am wealthy. Why would I oppose that? And I said, so you don't really care about anyone else other than you and your family.
Right.
I said, is that right? And she said, that is right. I don't care about anyone else. And I had the same exchange with another woman who looked me right in the eye and said, no, I don't care about anybody else.
Well, Maria, what you're raising, I mean, there was a lot of quotes like this and sentiments you saw about, it felt like, look, we have ours. We're happy with it. The rest doesn't make any difference.
A lot of people don't care about anyone else. I mean, I can't put a percentage on it, but there are such. That's part of the problem with the messaging around the health care plan. The only message Democrats have ever developed is there are 47 million uninsured. A lot of people don't really care that. To be honest, don't care that much. They might not like it,
Lenny?
But it's just not a selling point.
Lenny.
Well, if she's encountered people that would say that, I can't stand with those folks. And I don't stand with those folks. I mean, anybody that basically says that we're Americans and we're the greatest country in the world, but I can care less about people that are suffering, and if I have an opportunity to create a better way for more Americans, that I really don't care to, I can't stand with that. So I have no defense of that, nor do I promote that with my personal philosophy. But I will say this. We seem to forget, and I said this on CNN yesterday, you know, Cindy Sheehan was out there protesting this war. People were calling Bush the Antichrist, and when he got a shoe thrown at him overseas, we all got a big kick out of it. It was pretty popular to bash our president and to revile. I mean, President George W. Bush was not just hated. He was reviled, and people, including Republicans, felt that the government was getting away from them even then. We forget about the Patriot Act protest. We forget about Republicans losing in 2006. And it wasn't just because Democrats came out and stormed, and there was no African-American vote that really got riled up in 2006. It was because Republicans were so sick of the Republican scandals that were going on in Capitol Hill. They were so sick of the direction of government under George W. Bush that when he walked out of office, when he walked out of the White House in January, he limped out. He probably needed two canes to leave the White House. He was that crippled of a president, and his legacy will probably stay that way. So this is not a new phenomenon. Unfortunately, because we have the first African-American president, you do have a couple of folks that are now throwing a racist element into this. I've seen it myself, and I have stood against it myself. So I'm not going to say that it's not out there, but this is not everybody that's out there. Well, we should not characterize it as such.
Well, and I think there's a difference between a couple folks who are going to be outright racist and then a problem the nation still has in dealing with issues around racial inequality. Have we reached racial inequality? We're still a racist society, and all the tensions and feelings around that. So I'm not at all saying that if you're against Obama's health care reform, that means you're racist, or if you didn't vote for Obama, it means you're racist. But I do believe, and I think this is a difficulty for Obama. Some people put forward that Obama's very good at bringing people together in racial reconciliation. I would argue that most of the times he's been very good at trying to move us past racial tensions so he can move on this political agenda. And the difficult piece is when you have a lot of these tensions and you're having pro-Obama people versus anti-Obama people, it can become very racialized very quickly. And I think Obama's always going to be in a worse situation because of that.
Let me go back to the phones, and I wanted to talk about this poll. Maria, thank you for your call, 410-319-8888. And Luke in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi, how's it going?
Well, Luke, welcome.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the, I am a conservative, I'm from South Carolina, and this whole painting conservatives with the fact that, painting them all the same brush, saying that they're racist and all that, and obviously being from the South, it also plays into it. I just want to make it clear, people who share the same values as I do don't disagree with Obama and aren't against the health care plan because of his skin color, but because I believe in personal responsibility and values are very contrary to his, and I believe he's moving our country in the wrong direction. And I just, I get very frustrated with callers who, instead of looking at the facts and backing up if you believe in the healthcare program, that's fine. But back it up with statistics and facts. Don't call the people who have contrary views to you, don't call them racist and make inflammatory remarks.
I have to say, my view on this, taking a kind of a long view, and I'm might be the oldest guy here today, except for you, Mark. I really began following this sort of stuff closely in 1992 with the entry into the national race of Bill Clinton. I have to say, to me, looking at the current furor about President Obama and about President Obama's health plan, it's very reminiscent about the furor about President Clinton in 1993 and 1994 and the furor about his health plan. Ludicrous stories were made up about President Clinton, the millions of people he had murdered. These stories were peddled by our most famous religious leaders. They were all over cable. Films were shown. Ludicrous claims that many people believed. And Bill Clinton was white. I've seen him. The health plan, some of the people that are making up crazy stories about Obama's health plan, the same people are making up crazy stories about Clinton's health plan. There were some instances. Mrs. Clinton, then First Lady, had a health event in Seattle where there was a lot of the same sort of turmoil and yelling. They just didn't have any more events after that. I'm struck by how similar this is. This is a part of American politics that's been out there for a long time, for the last 20 years and beyond, and earlier and beyond that. That's the way it looks to me. So when I see, I think liberals should be careful not to assume every time the first black president is criticized, even foolishly, even crazily, should not assume it's a race thing, because the last white Democratic president was criticized in lunatic ways, and his health plan was criticized in very similar ways. And that's just a part, to me, I see the similarity there more than the difference.
Well, and I'll add to that I mean, the caller was saying that, you know, he was calling complaining about painting conservatives or people against Obama as being racist. I don't think anyone on this radio program had done that thus far. But I do believe because President Obama is the first black president, and because of the way because of the racist history of this country, race is playing a factor. Now, I do believe a lot of things are playing a factor. People are concerned about health care reform. There's a great partisan divide, and I agree that, you know, the same kind of similar lunatic things against Clinton also happened against Obama. But there is a racial factor that's playing out, and I think it makes it more difficult for President Obama. And two, you know, I do get concerned about this idea of sometimes when people are talking about personal responsibility and government intervention, because as someone who looks at some of these issues, it does seem to me that when you started having the war on poverty, you started having more social programs that were more publicly aimed at helping disenfranchised minorities that before were not getting the benefits of social welfare programs in this country, that's when welfare became bad. That's when it was really personal responsibility, because now particularly black people were getting it. And I think there is a racist tinged history to some of those what people might call core conservative principles, but the way they have been used in some cases but not in others.
Let me open the phone to you. I'm going to question some of the issues that have been raised in some of these town meetings and the reality or fallaciousness of them. 410-319-8888. Pam and Owings Mills, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon.
Thanks for
taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I have a comment. And as I was waiting on the phone, I listened to your guest. And particularly the guy that called from South Carolina. And from all the stuff that I have read and I have seen as far as the town hall meetings are concerned, you don't see the people who may be just concerned. And then there's nothing wrong with having a concern, and maybe you don't like the way someone is running the country, and you disagree with that. But the kinds of stuff that's been going on, you got the birthers out there, you got people in North Carolina who's saying most of them don't believe the president was born in the United States. This is the kind of stuff. You got somebody who was at one of the meetings. The guy had a gun. And then there was this other lady that had a president of Obama as Hitler. But yet, they don't like the plan. They don't want the plan. But they're on a lot of those same senior citizens that mostly be at the meeting. They're against their own self-interest. They're already on government assistance with Medicare, Medicaid, but they don't want any of that to be taken away from them. So I think if we're going to have a debate, and I don't really care which side of the debate you may be on,
mm-hmm.
why not try to have the debate where somebody can understand what you're talking about? What is your problem with what President Obama is trying to do? Why are you for that? Why are you against that? Why not get all that stuff out on the table instead of just hooping, hollering, and screaming? Because that's all you see. Gun carrying. Representative David Scott had a swastika on his sign in front of his office. And you kind of trying to tell me, and your calls, and especially your Republican guy back there, going to try to tell me that most of it isn't racist. There's nothing wrong with having a disagreement. I say let's
report.
Let's debate this.
Okay. Pam, I think you made some strong points. We have to take a break. I want to come back and talk about the points that are being made against the plan, and I think some of the weak points that are being made by Democrats who are for the plan, and talk about also the gentleman with the gun and what he represents in all of this, and that what role that plays in this world of healthcare, and also this battle over the soul for America, which might be even deeper, I think, going on. We'll look at all that and come to your calls as well. As soon as we return, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late, Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. So, D, Rodney, Derek, Sandy, we're coming to your calls and coming right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. I'm here to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Marlene and Stuart Greenebaum Cancer Center, an NCI-designated cancer center providing research, treatment, and education to further the prevention of and cure for cancer. Online at www.umgcc.org, or the number for information is 1-800-888-8823. I am joined in studio by Diedrich Mohammed, Senior Organizer and Research Associate for the Program on Equality and the Common Good at the Institute for Policy Studies, Bob Somerby, Editor of the Daily Hour. Lennon McAllister joins us by phone. He's a political commentator for Fox News Charlotte. It's North Carolina, by the way. Contributor to the loop21.com and author of the new book, Diary of a Mad Black PYC, Proud Young Conservative, that you can now purchase on Amazon.com. We'll have to get it ourselves so we can interview Lenny just about that subject. Right, we'll do that, Lenny. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. So let's take, there are three things we wanted to raise here. We never got to the poll, which I want to get to. But first, let's talk about what Pam raised before we went to the break. Then we'll come back to all these people who are calling in, try to get as many people in as possible. Let me start with the significance of the man in New Hampshire with the gun on the church property, which allowed him to carry the gun, with the flag, with the sign saying, we have to water the Tree of Liberty with the blood of tyrants. Now, Bob just looks at me. Bob
held his hand
and went zero. I think it's a great deal more than zero.
I'm going to go with zero. I'll tell you why.
But let's talk about what the significance or lack of is for that. We'll hear Bob, then we'll hear what Lenny has to say, and then we'll go to Diedrich, okay?
Here's why I say zero.
Go ahead.
Because that was one guy, and instead of talking about the merits of the health plan all over America, now we're not talking about this one guy. You know, he was on Hardball last night being interviewed. You know, he's, who is he? It's, you know, it's just not it's just not very significant until he gets all of us talking about something else.
Like the plumber.
Yes. And now, if we had strong points to advance in favor of this health plan, which, to be honest, we sort of don't. Let's be honest. Liberals and Democrats sort of don't have really compelling talking points for this. And that's one of the reasons why we're so easily drawn off onto talking about this thing that happened and this thing that happened. But that's not the way to win a debate. In my view, that is really not the way to win a debate. You're getting distracted to this, distracted to that, and you end up not advancing your case. And I just think it's a way to lose.
Lenny?
Well, number one, I agree with all the points that were just made. But, you know, again, regardless of what people think, it's going to come across as a form of intimidation towards anyone that is advocating for this plan or is still supporting the Obama expansion of government, just in the same way as the Black Panthers were sitting outside of polls in November intimidating folks to kind of make sure that that purple voter voted blue, just like we've had other folks that have done their own thing throughout American history. We cannot have folks threatening the President of the United States with guns. I think we do need to have discussions about the health care issue. We need to stay focused and on task. I've actually written an article that will come out on the Loop 21 tomorrow, the loop21.com, that says just that. We need to focus on the issue at hand, stop focusing on the news, and make the news. Either be the news, watch the news, or make the news. We need to start making the news, and it's going to take people on both sides of this aisle to know the facts, be able to bring statistics, and then make compelling arguments, not with yelling, not with hatred. One of the callers called in and talked about all the Nazi swastikas and calling Obama a Nazi. Well, they painted George Bush as being the Antichrist and being the devil. We've heard this about Reagan. We heard it about Clinton. We've heard it about both Bushes. So this is what an American president goes through. And one of the issues that I brought up during the campaign and immediately after President Obama won the election in November was you have to treat him like every other president. If you're going to treat him with kid gloves, not only are you saying from your own perspective that we haven't gotten through our racial ills yet, but more so you're demeaning the man. He went to Harvard. He ran a presidential campaign and won. Treat him like you treat the other 43 presidents. Everybody from Washington who was hung in effigy all the way down to Bush, too, was hung in effigy. So you're going to see some type of protest. you're going to have some sensitivity to Obama being a black man being hung in effigy, and I would caution people to kind of not cross that line. But the other criticisms that he's going to go through, he's going to get that. And it seems as though we have a knee-jerk reaction in this country to any type of criticism that President Obama has brought forth, particularly considering that none of the things that he said he was going to bring to light has come to pass yet, and now they're talking about a middle-class tax hike, which was one of the crux of his campaign promises just a year ago.
Well, I don't think Obama's talking about a middle-class tax hike, but I also want to highlight that I don't think the way Obama is being treated by the press or what have you is really a marker of where we are racially in this country. I mean, I think clearly this country is marked by serious racial inequality that didn't change, that wasn't different the day before he was elected and the day or the day after he's elected, and that's a whole different issue. But I think this idea about we're getting distracted by talking about that, you know, only one man with the gun, I mean, I think oftentimes many policy decisions in this country, probably most, aren't made strictly about that policy issue by the merits of this. I think the healthcare debate isn't just about healthcare. I think actually most of this town hall reaction isn't just about healthcare. I mean, I think this is a continuing of the Tea Party piece, which I still think the whole Tea Party movement was really unclear per se, other than a negative reaction to Obama as well as an underlying principle of concern about some types of government involvement, government spending as it relates to domestic concern. So I can understand if you just want to talk about healthcare, you know, we can do that. But I think you're going to miss part of what's happening in the healthcare debate if you don't look at where, you know, why swastikas are happening, why people are bringing guns to healthcare debates. And it might only be one person carrying a gun, but there's only one person walking into the Holocaust Museum with a gun that killed a young African-American guard there. And, you know, it only takes a few people with guns to create mass terrorism in this country, as we had with Timothy McVeigh.
Let me address that before you go to your caller. I was at a speech in 2006 here in Charlotte, North Carolina, where President Bush was on stage, and a man from the balcony challenged him for 15 minutes, and President Bush let him talk, and he railed on the same way these people are at town hall meetings. I mean, this guy shouted at him, yelled at him, demeaned him, and ended up being on CNN. The same exact way as we're seeing now. I would be alive for that. This is not a new phenomenon, and I would venture to say that we've been seeing this type of animosity from both sides of the political aisle ever since the very controversial 2000 presidential election. The animosity and attention has been revved up.
I think it was before that. I am putting forth that there's racial dimensions to this, but I'm not acting like Obama brought forth partisan politics. I mean, it's clear there was crazy partisan politics. I mean, before Clinton, you know, clearly before Bush. I mean, yes, we are a very divided country, and there was a mythology that Obama was going to bring everybody together. We're going to be a post-racial, post-partisan country, and that is completely falling apart, and we're seeing that never was true, and it's clearly not true today.
And I want to get to this poll, but I want to get back to the callers. I want to finish what Pam said as we get to another caller here, but what she was talking about were the issues. And it seems to me part of the problem here that's been put forth, and you said, Bob, earlier, the liberal Democrats have done a lousy job of making their case for reform in this country. People want reform, but then they didn't make the argument why people wanted that reform, and that was the problem. And so other issues are taking the fore. Things like the kind of issue of death panels, that there will be no longer private insurance will be taken away from people in this thing, that they're accusing Obama of a Soviet-style rationing, that they're going to cut Medicare benefits for seniors, that these kind of things are things being thrown out by people yelling at town meetings, which really there are arguments that people who support the healthcare industry and support the pharmaceutical industry are making against the healthcare plan that can be argued. But these points that are being thrown out now are all visceral and emotional that have very little to do with reality, but they are taking the argument over every day.
Yeah, I don't know if the Medicare cuts has a little to do with reality. That's a reasonable thing to inquire about. It was certainly the center point of the Democratic criticism of Republicans in the mid-90s. There are Medicare cuts proposed under these proposed bills, and the claim by Obama is it's not going to affect benefits. It's only going to affect payments to providers. That's a perfectly legitimate thing to explore. Some of the other things, the death panels, obviously that's just lunacy. That is lunacy, and it needs to be. And the people who are going and saying that, in this case Sarah Palin, need to be driven out of American discourse. On our side, we've tolerated this forever, put up with it. We don't care. On our side, and this is not Obama, I'm talking about the last 15 years, our side is one, lazy, and two, in the bag. We don't care what anyone says about us.
You said in the bag. One of the things you said in the green room, Bob, then we'll go back to the phone unless you guys have quick things to say. Which you said in the green room to me, just before Dietrich walked into the green room, was that the problem with the Democrats is they're as much in the pocket of the healthcare industry and the pharmaceuticals as Republicans, so real reform was never part of the issue of the day to start with.
Very close.
Yeah. And I'll just add, and it's something you had also previously mentioned. I mean, it's easier to be against this change than it is because you're just for the status quo instead of being for it. Because I think most progressives, the kind of grassroots activist progressives, aren't excited about it because so many compromises have already been made. Even more compromises will be made. And the things that the grassroots activists on the left would be most excited about are already taken out of the bill. And so, right. And so we're already at that.
It's almost always easier to be against than for, unless you've done a good job of building your case for. On our side, just before Obama, just didn't do that in the last 15 years.
Before we turn back to Lenny McAllister, let's go back to the phones at 410-319-8888. You've been holding on for a long time. You're on the air.
Hi, Mark Steiner. Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks for calling.
You know, Mark, at the very best, we should have been able to expect informational and educational discourse in regard to the options that are being presented in reforming health care. We should have been informed and educated about the merits of things like a single-payer system, the merits of the fact that if you're insured with one employer but you leave that employer, you lose your insurance coverage, and the insurance coverage that is offered to you is often, you won't take it because it's too expensive. Those are the sorts of things that we really should have been able to expect to be educated about and to be informed in a debate in regard to the reform of health care. We have gone all off the mark. I mean, you cannot say that a shouting match educates or informs anyone. And this was, I mean, the opposition, Mark, is so incredibly vociferous. You say to yourself as an intelligent person, this has to be driven by more than just reforming health care. And unfortunately, I do believe that under the banner of health care reform and opposition thereto, the vociferousness is being driven by, you know, unresolved problems with the challenge of having President Obama in the White House, and the racial divide is being expressed under this opposition. So I just, you know, I rue the fact that this opportunity has been lost, and it isn't as though both sides, both supporters and those who do not support health care reform, they had more than enough time since Bill Clinton's administration to be able to clearly articulate policy. Policy is not being articulated here, neither those who support nor those who oppose, and that's what we should have been able, as American citizens, this is what we should have been able to expect at this point.
I'll just add on to that. I mean, it's disappointing, but it's also quite regular. I mean, I don't think whether it's the American political parties or the American media as a whole have had as a strong points informing the populace specifically about policy. Whether it was the Iraq War, I think that wasn't really decided about a real clear analysis of policy, but was decided much more by people's kind of feelings toward particular candidates or general worldview that then gets tied into policy. So I hear your frustration, and I can understand the disappointment, but also I think it is pretty much politics as usual, which is something in itself that should be bemoaned.
Lenny, as our house conservative today, what do you think?
Well, again, one of the issues that we're looking at is there are some underlying currents, but you know, I've been looking at some of these town halls. I looked at how Senator Claire McCaskill out in Missouri talked to the people in the town hall. She was extremely condescending. If you look at how all inspector. They're going to be very riled up at his town hall. He was a Republican when he went to Washington over the last election. He comes back as a Democrat. People are upset at government. They're upset at the people that represent them. They're upset over the stimulus package, and then they heard about AIG getting all these bonuses. They're upset that the unemployment was supposed to stay at 8, and now it's at 9.5. So you have all of these factors coming into play, and then the health care issue. Then you take a little bit of misunderstanding. You do throw in some elements here and there, not exclusively, but here and there, of racism. You bring all of this into play in a time where you have strong economic duress, and you're going to get this type of reaction. People have been frustrated with government. That's why Republicans got thrown out of Washington in 2006. People were sick of the Republicans then, and that included Republicans. So this has been brewing for a long time, and now you're spending huge amounts of money, being in debt to the Chinese. You have tension with Iran going on. You see what's been going on with North Korea and them just recently firing off all these missiles over the last several months. There's a lot of tension in America.
I would think people are most frustrated, not even really most with government, but with their own a shaky economic situation and this kind of this great recession we're going through. And you say, look at all this mix and it's a perfect storm. I know I'm jumping subjects, okay, but wait till we get to the immigration discussion. That's going to happen in the fall. And we'll really see this tinderbox get lit.
And I think that it will then get lit. And it's interesting, if you look at the polls, what Lenny McAllister was saying, and see what our listeners and the rest of us think about this, that the Gallup poll that came out, I think it was today or yesterday, that's in front of me here, that on the economy, 49% of the people, according to this poll, disapprove of how President Obama or his administration is handling the economy. And B, healthcare policy only gets 49, also has a 49% disapproval rating. And some are undecided, and the approval rating is at 48 and 43% respectively. So what this says to me is, and I think that Bob Herbert in the New York Times has, as I said to you, both of you during the break, has his fingers on the pulse. And part of what Lenny was saying is that what President Obama and the administration have been doing and Congress is bailing out Wall Street while unemployment is going up and we've been losing jobs in America. He may have created maybe some people, by some arguments, a million jobs in America, but people are very angry about what's going on, that we are not dealing with health care and reforming it. You know, things like I go to my doctor at Mercy Hospital. I go downstairs to get my blood test. He tells me to get. Well, I can't get my blood test at Mercy Hospital because the insurance won't cover Mercy Hospital. So I have to go outside the place where I go get my medical care to get my blood tested across town because of the way our healthcare policy in America runs. But nobody's talking about that. So people are frustrated. And I think that there is another perfect storm coming because people are getting very angry at government all over the place for not doing what they did. And it was the progressive forces in America, a minority of Democrats, who put Obama in the White House with their feet. And that's the people who are in some ways saying, it's not just conservatives saying they're not satisfied. It's progressives as well, Dietrich, that are saying they're not satisfied.
Yeah, I mean, I think clearly progressives. I mean, I think in this healthcare reform debate, you're not hearing that as much.
No, you're not. But
clearly, I think some progressives are disappointed. I'm very critical of Obama and the way he's dealt with the economy. But I also want to highlight that within 6 months, we've gone from the Great Recession, from a GDP that was decreasing by like 6% to now it was only decreased by 1%, and that the unemployment rate has gone down just slightly. Now, I have thousands of critiques with Obama. If anybody reads any of my work in Institute for Policy Studies, they'll know I've been very critical about the Wall Street bailout, about how Obama did not do enough in a stimulus package to focus on unemployment, and that in no way the economy has been a problem too, not just since the end term of Bush. There's been a 20, 30 year backslide for the American middle class, which is an overall issue, which is causing some frustration for Bush, for Clinton, and for Obama that isn't really being addressed either.
Yeah, you know, in some ways it's amazing there isn't more turmoil when you consider Barack Obama walked into the worst economic disaster since FDR. And we are going through a time of astonishing economic turmoil, and he's trying to pass a major healthcare reform at the same time. That's a hard slog. And you could almost say it's surprising there isn't more turmoil. We're going through a very unusual period. A lot of those people at those town halls, some of them are people that are reasonably well off and don't want to lose anything. Some of them are not. I saw people at that Spectre town hall. They were not well off people. Those were people who did not look well off to me. And if you're a struggling person in the black or white community, there's a lot to be struggling with right now, and a lot of people are upset, and it's almost surprising people aren't more upset.
410-319-8888. Derek, you're on the air.
Thank you so much for taking my call. Yes, I would like to ask why the Democratic Party did not get more motivated. There seems to be some very smart people, and I have a lot of faith in this president. I think that he will turn things around. However, the Democratic Party seems to be more interested in the politics of everything than to present the issues in the way that the American people can really learn something. Thank you.
And that's part of what you've been...
Oh, I think the Republican Party is conservative. The Democratic Party is a bunch of people hoping to get jobs at the Washington Post. I mean, that's that's the world we live in. I mean, there is no Democratic Party, and it's not Barack Obama's fault, and there's no liberal movement. There is no progressive politics in our country. There's a conservative politics which started being organized in the 60s. Well, good for them. That's what you should do. Our side hasn't really done that. We've kind of cruised, and we're getting bruised as a result, it seems to me, but...
Well, and I want to say, as someone who does a lot of work in D.C. or around the Hill, is I think, too, the pace of the policies that have been coming forward with massive amounts of kind of policy reforms being pushed forward has been something that a lot of liberal groups, I think, have had a hard time catching up to. And liberal groups, too, I think, aren't even used to having the opportunity of talking to the president, of making a change after 8 years of Bush. I know some people were just so happy just to be invited to a White House discussion about an issue. They didn't realize or didn't have really a plan of, well, how we're now going to push and advance our policy positions and our power. I mean, there's been attempts, but I think on both sides, I think Democrats and Republicans have had a hard time dealing with the, I mean, really a lot has gone through in 6 months since he's been in office. But again, I think it's easier to mount an opposition to a change as people are getting tired than it is to do a national education on healthcare reform, what this means, and all the false arguments that could be used against it.
Especially now. That should have been going on for years. I mean, you have to build education projects.
And Obama hasn't even been in national politics
for
that long.
No, it's not his doing.
And then that goes back to both of you gentlemen's point. It's in large part because when you're opposition, you can take the easy path or the hard path. President George W. Bush was an easy target. He didn't speak well. He wasn't clear. He, especially even during 9/11, he was reactionary. People didn't trust him. So you could either build your case and then stick it to him, or you can just stick it to him. And what ended up happening over the course of the 6 years while the Republicans were in charge in Washington under George W. Bush's two terms, they just stuck it to him. So by now we're at a point in time where, okay, you won the credibility of the majority of America by way of having the first African-American president, have the first Democratic president in practically 10 years, one of the few Democratic presidents over the last 30 years. What are you going to do with it?
Well, their
case was never built.
I'm sorry, we're just about out of time. And I was going to make a little quip here that maybe the people can pick up and beat me up on next time, which we'll have you back on very soon. Is that, but I think that George W. Bush did his job, and his job was partially fueled by the oil industry. They got Iraq, they got their oil, and they're on the move. So we can fight about that next time.
I thought you were going to say his job was to destroy the known world. that's where I misunderstood.
Lenny McAllister, Bob Somerby, Dijuk Mohammed, thank you all so much for being with us this hour. It's been great.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
And thank you all for calling in and making the show what it is. When we return, Woody Curry joins us for his monthly visit. We're going to talk about why there's so many suicides among the National Guardsmen, which he knows a great deal about, and talk about the state of the streets, which he knows a great deal about, and more. So stay with us for that. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression, and over 70 years later, they're still here to help people during difficult times. More information is available at MECU.com. We'll be right back. Don't go away.